Welcome to the Workflow Show, episode 106. I'm Merrill Davis, and alongside Nick Gold, this week we're talking about Over the Top. And no, I don't mean the awesomely cheesy 1980s movie starring Sylvester Stallone, which I love dearly.
It's about arm wrestling.
It is, as most 80s movies are.
It's about a special move called Over the Top.
It is. And it actually, just an aside, I love that movie so much because I feel like it's a great like father and son story. I get teary-eyed every time.
Yeah, but the funny thing about the arm wrestling move Over the Top, you watch it and you're like, that's kind of like cheating in thumb wrestling where you like whip out your pointer finger from around the side and like just like go over the top with your pointer.
That's
it's like
right.
The arm wrestling version
the
of
the arm wrestling version of cheating. And that's as good a segue as any to talk about what we actually mean by over the top. And, or as it's referred to as OTT. So OTT is a fairly new term as far
it's
as...
It's kind of buzzwordy, and you know we love our buzzwords here on the Workflow Show. We try to use acronyms and initialisms as regularly as we can.
You know, just so we can...
feel smart.
And like, you know, the government, because they do that all the time too.
Yeah, the government.
But, so what exactly is OTT?
That's a good question. That's a good question because I think it's both technological and kind of revolutionary.
Yes. So I guess we have to start on a pretty abstract level here because we're going to talk about the internet and how the internet comes into play when somebody's talking about over the top.
And how that differs from traditional stuffs. So I'll take it from the top, Merrill. How about that?
Why don't you take it from over the top?
We're going to be riffing on that. This entire episode.
I think we each get another allotment of two and then we're done.
Okay, make a note of this. So, in the world of broadcast, back in the day, people built like radio antennas. I'm pretty sure I saw that in some movie once. And you still drive by them in Baltimore. There's the several really tall ones that I'm always like, God, if a hurricane came through here, that's just going to be a disaster.
It's like 100 years of infrastructure that all of a sudden is starting to seem a little archaic.
Yeah, so, but it was all about over-the-air broadcasting, getting your content to the masses. I mean, it was the definition of broadcast, and the way that you could get content to people was by sending it out through the airwaves as radio signals. Obviously, that began with radio, and it moved into the realm of moving pictures with sound later. So, you know, the antenna thing gave way, I guess probably what, in the 70s, to cable systems. And actually having cables run in the ground between cable companies, which were very kind of local and regional at the time, to the end users. And
that was a glorious time
in
television.
We had one of those like cool little set-top boxes with a real physical push button kind of things.
I remember the six movies that showed on Cinemax.
And there
was
like HBO, and there was like Nickelodeon. Oh man, those were the days of like being like a 5-year-old watching Nickelodeon. That was like old school.
Alanis Morissette was on that, man.
Oh, I know, and you can't do that on television. Great times.
Whoever would thought that she would then go on to national television talking about breastfeeding?
I wouldn't have.
It's okay, David. You can edit that out. It wasn't as funny as I thought.
I think he's going to keep that part. And then obviously, kind of around that similar time frame, maybe a hair later, you know, some consumers moved to putting up satellite dishes of their own. At first, this was kind of like, almost like the whole little hacker ethic where people were literally pulling signal off of broadcasters' satellites that weren't really intended for end users to get content off of. And
there was a bit of that. And wasn't
They had to use descramblers, there was this whole like underground of getting descrambler codes and all that.
But there were also people who just lived in a region, very much like, you know, when broadband internet first came, you know, there were people who were in the region where the infrastructure was viable, and there were people who were out in the middle of nowhere. And that also meant, you know, using satellite
and
for television.
And then, of course, that satellite gave way to kind of dish TV and DirecTV and more kind of akin to cable broadcasting, and that it was totally legitimate. They themselves were kind of a network bundling a bunch of licensed television channels together into a set of offerings. that a consumer would just, you know, kind of legitimately have access to. No descramblers or any of that, you know, out of the back pages of, you know, weird magazines for geeks.
And then it all changed.
Well, yeah, it all has really changed. And I'd say over the course of the first decade of the 21st century is when we saw all of that. And what happened? Well, this tiny little thing we like to refer to as the interwebs.
The tubes.
The tubes that connect it all.
Sweet tubes.
The TCP/IP tubes.
Yeah. Well, you know, so something strange did happen. And probably the best way to explain to everybody what exactly OTT is as far as internet is concerned, think about things you use every day. You probably are a member of Netflix. You're probably a member of Hulu.
Well, you might even just watch videos on YouTube.
Yeah. All these things are what are known as over-the-top applications. They sit on top of the internet. They are not controlled by the purveyors of internet, not by Verizon, not by Comcast, not by anybody.
Yeah, so that's the crux of it, right? So now we all have these high-speed, high-bandwidth internet connections that are capable of spitting, sometimes in some cases, I've noticed, high-def video that looks better than what you get through your cable provider or whatnot on their set-top box.
That's true, because and it's known that many of the cable providers do use heavy levels of compression.
Oh, they compress the heck out of that stuff. Yeah. And now you've got, like, I've got a 50 megabit Comcast connection at home. They just upped it. I don't even have to pay any more for it. And you can get crazy video in a fraction of 50 megabits. And the thing with over-the-top and the crux of what over-the-top implies is that the content creator and distributor is using the public internet to get to the viewer, to some device, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit, that the viewer is watching this content on, but the internet service provider that they get their internet connection through is not acting as a gatekeeper for that content. You're just using that pipe that they're giving you to access to the internet to get whatever video and media content you want.
And this is the way that we would hope it remains.
Well, it's cool, right? But it's a totally radical departure on so many levels. It disrupts business models. The technology is way different than how traditional broadcast even worked a few years ago.
If you're an old school broadcast guy right now, you're kind of shaking in your booties because you know what paid the bills for the last 25 years really doesn't pay the bills anymore. And this is sort of part of a more prevalent change that we've seen in multiple industries, the recording industry, certainly in the movie industry, and in all the associated, distribution methods associated with media in general. So here is just, you know, the next in a long line.
And it's so much more anarchic. Let's start with kind of looking at this world of over-the-top content and quote-unquote broadcasting from the viewer's perspective. How about that? Because again,
okay,
this is what a lot of people are familiar with. They're using these services.
I go home.
You mentioned a few.
Yeah. So I go home. I fire up my PlayStation 3, and then I look for some new releases on Netflix, and then I press play. What has just happened there?
Well, Netflix has their videos that have been encoded that are sitting on servers both at their primary location and I'm sure Netflix kind of seeds servers out at key points in the internet distribution world. And, you know, you're using your internet connection. Who do you have?
I use Comcast at home.
I use Comcast as well.
It's mostly by not choice.
Well, and that's the funny thing about internet connections is that the reality is it's not a terribly competitive market.
I'd like Fios, but the infrastructure here is such that I can't get
it. Well, they just don't have it in Baltimore City. It just doesn't exist in Baltimore City. But you've got your internet connection. You're paying for X amount of bandwidth at a given moment and probably X number of gigabytes per month.
That's true. And the tier I have, they have a 3 gig cap per month. So I have to actually attenuate the quality of video that I stream if I watch a lot. Instead of doing the best quality streaming, I might do a mid-range one just because I do have a cap. But
So, but you've got this pipe, right? And you've got this device. You've got a game system in the case that you were just talking about. It's running basically an app that was developed specifically for that platform.
Correct.
There's Netflix, who is the content provider here. But Comcast really is kind of left out of this equation here. Yeah, well,
and they don't
they're still
like
charging
it
you for
one
the internet
bit.
Connection.
They're trying very hard in their own business models now to make sure that what happens is that you still have to pay them in some respects. Certainly the Olympics this past summer would be an excellent example of where they're still trying to pigeonhole you into
you
an existing
model. You could go
model.
To the Comcast website or I think even the NBC website, but you'd have to enter in credentials that proved that you were kind of like a customer of a paid cable service that would have given you access to, I think, like the MSNBC Sports Channel or whatever they
well,
call
the whole,
it.
Well, the
NBC
whole kit and
Sports.
Caboodle. And they are actually trying to roll out and are actively rolling out their, I think they're calling it Xstream or Xplay, whatever the Xfinity rebranding of their on-demand video services are. They obviously, this is interesting, just to give you sort of some perspective, Comcast will not charge you against the amount of bandwidth
your,
that you
your
use.
Cap, yeah.
Yeah, if you use their on-demand video service.
Well, so I can go to Xfinity.com, and Comcast makes television channels, movies, all that content, vast majority of what you can get access to on TV or through your cable set-top box using the on-demand functions.
Or
you,
even Hulu.
You can get through their site on your computer. But again, this kind of looks like over the top, but it's not over the
top. It's not.
Because they are still acting as the gatekeeper for that content. They are forcing you to prove that you're paying Comcast every month, not only for your internet connection, but you are a paying television customer, and so that gives you access to that television content on their website. And again, that's like to compete with this over-the-top landscape where there's a million other people on the internet who are willing to give you video through just your internet connection. But this is for premium content. And again, the business models that they have dictate that you have to be paying them as a television customer in addition to being an internet customer order to get that stuff.
Which, I'll have to say, as far as the Olympics were concerned, was a real slap in the face, as I have terrestrial television, I have an HDTV with an antenna, and I can get access to all the NBC televised publicly through a broadcaster from one of these antenna stations we were talking about before. But somehow, magically, if I wanted to do the exact same thing, sitting in the exact same room, looking at the exact same television, if I wanted to, I'd have to have an Xfinity subscription.
But there is a difference, and I think it's worthwhile pointing out to customers, and, you know, putting on kind of the devil's advocate role for a moment here. Why? The reason is because of established business models. These companies are, you know, if you just get the raw feeds, like those Olympics feeds that you could get through their website were very raw. They weren't giving you all the same commercials that you were seeing in the over-the-air or cable broadcasts.
I'm not sure. I wasn't able to watch
them. Yeah, no, I think they were like very raw feeds of the games. And
you mean without Bryan Adams and the whole world talking over them?
I don't know how much of that there was, but again, they can't turn their whole model of making money to give viewers content off overnight. And even if there was kind of another model out there, they can't get to it very easily. Like, I'll give you another example. HBO has an app called HBO Go. You can watch it on your computer screen through a web browser. You've got it on your iOS devices. I think there's probably an Android version. And probably a number of other platforms. There might be HBO Go for your Roku box, which is another one of these receiver boxes for kind of over-the-top content on your television, but that's really just using your internet connection. HBO requires as well that you enter in credentials that prove that you are a paying television HBO customer before you can watch that HBO content through those apps, through that HBO app platform.
I mean, largely that's also because HBO is owned by Time Warner.
I mean, but think about it, right? I'm HBO. I have an existing set of contracts with cable providers, with satellite providers. Some of which
I'm wholly owned by.
Well, but that's besides the point. Let me make the point here, which is that if I'm HBO and I have a certain amount of revenue that I know is coming in annually based on existing on-the-books contracts with well-established distributors of content, cable companies and satellite companies, and I have this model where I could sell my content directly to end viewers and have a true over-the-top application and just charge viewers directly for.
It would be awesome. And they would make more money hand over fist.
How do you get there from point A?
Well, you don't get there without...
throw out all of your contracts overnight and say, we're not going to have any revenue for the next 24 months, but eventually there will be enough direct subscriptions.
Clearly the way it operates now is because of the existing paradigm.
Of course. And they have to play it conservatively. They owe it to their shareholders to play it conservatively.
But I also, you know, like a show like Game of Thrones, which is by far the cash cow of HBO right now, that does well. It's actually, I think it's like the number one most pirated show right now. As well, with a show like that, the market has already they've already demonstrated.
But you tell me how they can get there.
To purchase.
But you tell me how they can get there in a way that isn't
going to marketplace. You need that.
That's the thing, and this is the challenge, right? There's this glorious future that I think a lot of people see, which is that the people who produce content can sell it directly in a very itemized, piecemeal way to the end viewers without any of that extra cruft of the middleman. And the middleman simply becomes the purveyor of packets, right? It's purely a TCP/IP internet distribution system. And your relationship with Comcast is just the internet pipe or Verizon or whoever it may be. And then beyond that, my ability to get as much content as I want is just between me and the person making the content. And we're all kind of paying for our internet use in between. And I think like that would be glorious, except to the existing people who make tons of money off of being the gatekeepers of all the content.
And, you know, I appreciate your devil's advocate argument here, which is that, of course, there's a lot of stuff that's already in place. But, you know, history will tell us, certainly like with the record companies, that holding on to an old model simply because it made you like just tons and tons of money and you feel entitled to continue to make that level of money without changing anything in your industry over a period of 10 plus years is not sustainable. It's just not.
And you make a really good point, which is that given that you have this established kind of media establishment, right, that the main broadcasters, the big premium channels, the people producing content, you know, and the viewers, obviously, and now this radical new way of being able to get content to people directly, who does this benefit and who does this threaten? Well, the people who are locked into their existing business models, the reality is,
They're taking our money.
Well, they don't have a clear path forward. But for any person who wants to be a broadcaster now, for anyone who's like, I'm going to create content and I want to get it to viewers, and you are not relying on an existing distribution network, you're not relying on an established business plan, but you can kind of do whatever you want to do, you know, that the technology allows for, it's like the salad days, man. I mean, I can just be a broadcaster, and there's no technical challenge to getting video content to pretty much every single set of eyeballs on the planet, or single eyeballs in the case of people who maybe have lost an eye.
Right. Okay. Leela from Futurama.
Yeah, like her. Well, but she didn't lose one. She's a cyclops.
Yeah. Actually, she's not a cyclops. She's a mutant. She's a mutant.
Yeah, I know. I saw that episode.
But so really all you need is something on the front end, something on the back end, and something in the middle.
Yes. And the thing in the middle is just you have an internet connection. So let's talk about it from both ends. We talked a bit about the viewer's end. You mentioned your PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
there's obviously special boxes, and there's like a dozen of them, probably more than a dozen of them. There's the Apple TV kind of technically counts.
Yeah, because it certainly has a certain level of integration of things like Netflix. And,
it's got
and
a few, but it's not wide open. If you look at things like the Roku box.
Roku, which is great.
That's more wide open because it's pretty easy for content producers to create channels for Roku. Mm-hmm. And Roku's wanting to sign up as many people who want to do Roku channels as possible because it gives people more reasons to buy Roku boxes. The other one is Boxy.
Oh, yeah.
Boxy is like
Boxy's
extreme
great.
Example because Boxy actually gives you a way of basically pointing your Boxy box at any video content on the internet.
There are
ways that certain content producers try to block you from getting to their content through Boxy, but you know, an over-the-top broadcaster is thrilled to have you watch their content on your Boxy box, and Boxy is a very open kind of platform. So
can you say box again?
Boxy box.
Box.
The Boxy box rocks.
Well, yeah, and then there are, you know, so we could just rattle off a list.
And there's Logitech has one. I think Microsoft has one. There's the Google TV that hasn't really taken off, but that's an example. There are these specialized set-top boxes.
I even have my Samsung Blu-ray player. I have an ability. There's
the
an
TVs
app.
Have
there's
them
an
built
marketplace in
now.
In my Blu-ray
Absolutely.
Player.
Absolutely. TVs have them built in now. The Xbox 360 is huge for this. There's tons of quote-unquote channels for Xbox 360, including Netflix.
Though you need an Xbox Live
Gold membership. I think that's such a crock.
It's just, you know, you don't need that on your Wii or your PlayStation 3, though. Just, you know, putting it
on. I think Microsoft. Anyway.
Yeah.
So there's all these actual boxes, but of course there's your computer and your web browser, right? That's a perfect example.
And your iPhone and your iPad.
And Android, right? All of these platforms, whether they're set-top boxes sort of, but just to connect to the internet, whether they're your mobile devices, your tablets, your smartphones, your computer just itself, and a web browser, these are all over-the-top content viewing systems. Whereas traditional broadcast is pretty much your TV with either a set of rabbit ears or the cable provider's set-top box, or maybe Verizon for Fios or something like that, or the dish TV or whatever they're called, you know, satellite receiver system. And that's all you get, you know, if you want to get those systems content. Whereas these other platforms, it's basically just, I'm a consumer, I got this device, and I got an internet connection. Woohoo, I'm ready to go. And the world is your oyster because there's like a bajillion different people putting out internet content, you know, web video content on the web now.
So if I was a guy that said, I have a specific set of video content that I want to generate and I want to get it out to the world and I don't want to deal with traditional broadcasters. Those guys, they're old fogies. They don't know what they're talking about, right?
I don't want to have to sell my show to anyone. Right. Why should I have to prove myself to anyone?
The cost of entry is so low as far as the technology associated with generating the video content. I can get my HD cameras. I can buy a light kit. I can, you know, if I know what I'm doing and I want to generate a chat show or whatever, I can create something that is a very high level of production quality.
Absolutely.
And then I can take that and I can get it H.264 encoded. And share it to the world? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, yeah, and I mean, so let's take it from the simplest, right? Let's look at the real bare-bones setup. You got your content, right? You got a video. You spit something out of Final Cut or Premiere. You're Avid. It's done. It's edited. Okay. Pretty much any computer that you're editing video on will let you transcode it to some kind of a web delivery flavor of video, just like an H.264 QuickTime movie. That's a quick just example. Pretty much all video delivered on the internet now is at its core H.264. So all you need is to use, you know, QuickTime or Final Cut itself or Compressor or another transcoding application like the one that comes with the Adobe Production Premium. Any transcoding app or a specialized one like Episode from Telestream or many, many others, Sorensen Squeeze. And I'm just going to turn my video that I made from kind of the edit quality video into a high quality looking but very delivery oriented format like LongOp H.264, you know, maybe wrapped as an MP4 or .mov, right? So I want to get this into the eyeballs of every single person on the interwebs. What do I do? Like, if I want to be really cheap about it and hit everyone, I can post it on YouTube, right?
What's this YouTube? I've never heard of that.
So YouTube was like, as most of our listeners will know, one of the very first widely adopted platforms for allowing pretty much anyone to post video content on the internet.
Oh boy, did I love the early days of YouTube.
Back before Google bought them?
Yeah, it was an interesting time. And lots of interesting content. No question. There's still interesting content.
Oh, I mean, there's so much. It's like this sea. And I mean, YouTube, what is YouTube? It's a website that I go to as a customer. Or on the iPhone, it's a particular app, although apparently that's not going to be baked into iOS 6 anymore.
Though, you know, I would venture to say that the customer of YouTube isn't necessarily the end user. The customer is the advertiser.
Well, so that's so YouTube is two things. YouTube is a sophisticated website and back-end system for allowing users to post their content so the whole world can see video through the internet to many different devices that are capable of showing YouTube content. But you know what YouTube also is? It is an advertising delivery platform.
It is.
It's owned by Google. And what's Google? The world's biggest advertising company. That's what they do.
And
remember,
they know how to monetize.
Just if you are using Google and you're not paying them any money, you are not the customer. You are the product.
Just like Facebook.
Any of these online websites where you're using them for free and there's advertising involved, if you're the one using it for free and you're not the one paying them, you are the product, and it's your eyeballs and attention and brain
and your digital footprint
that are exactly all of your like browsing history and all the weird stuff, the cookies that they're installing on your web browser are picking up about you. That's all getting sold to the people who are actually paying those companies money, which are their advertisers. And so YouTube, tied into Google's set of offerings for people who want to advertise, has a way of monetizing the content that you present through YouTube. And so this is interesting because then the person posting the content can be making money off of the platform, but and actually getting paid kickbacks by Google.
I don't know
Google.
If they officially use the phrase kickbacks, though. But yeah, well, after a certain number of impressions, if you have a video that is popular, you will these certain functions in YouTube are unlocked that allow you to
and it ties
monetize.
Into their AdSense platform. And so, you know, if you want to post videos through YouTube, YouTube/Google has a revenue generation model for you as a content creator. And you as an advertiser who maybe want to advertise through kind of the world's biggest video broadcast network, aka YouTube, you know, you have ways of feeding your video ads into that, so they're getting peppered throughout a variety of people's videos, you know, in any given day.
Though I will say this is not something that you should hang your hat on, because I think at this point it's a fairly inundated platform.
And it's a new platform, and the business models just aren't really fully hashed out yet.
And the truth of the matter is that you will hear stories of people who've really made a lot of money through YouTube, but they are few and far between, and lots of times they made stupid videos with cats.
So, but that's one example, and you know, the flip side of it is YouTube is maybe a good place for a content producer to start building an audience. It's obviously you can't customize the look of your YouTube channel all that much. It's not going to be wrapped within all the other stuff. I mean, you can embed YouTube videos in your own page, to be sure, and just have your web developers create, you know, a web identity that you want your viewers to see. But the reality is it's you know, you're still obviously posting your videos on YouTube. And some over-the-top content creators and quote-unquote new-school over-the-top broadcasters are really going to want to control the overall experience. And so you could take, and he's not really my cup of tea, people, and I'm not going to like get into politics or any of that stuff, but just overall, he's not my cup of tea. But Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is no longer doing stuff with Fox. He started his own absolute over-the-top broadcast network.
I mean,
through the internet.
Used, Leo Laporte and like This Week in Tech.
Yeah, more people in the world, Meryl, know who Glenn Beck is than Leo Laporte. And that's a sad thing that speaks poorly of our culture. But he's probably the biggest traditional broadcaster who pulled away or was kicked off of, depending on whose story you believe, a traditional broadcast network and then decided, you know what, I'm going to go over the top. And his model is to control the whole experience for his viewers. It's all of his web content, I believe, is just delivered through his website. And you pay a membership fee to him because he figured, hey, I can count on this many people wanting to continue to watch me being crazy on quote-unquote TV. So if even a fraction of them pay this much per month for access to my kind of Glenn Beck over-the-top television network, you know, I'm going to make XYZ and that's enough to cover my costs and, you know, make some money and, you know, that could be a good model. And I think that kind of thing, where sure, you're partnering with a content delivery network. You're probably not hosting these videos yourself. You're probably using Akamai or Limelight Networks or one of these content delivery networks that specializes in hosting, you know, rich media content for you that you can still point to through your webpage, but they're actually holding the videos and doing the streaming. And you're probably going to partner with them, but then you're going to just point to their stuff through your own webpage, and maybe you have a paywall that you create. And if you think you can be a good judge of how much, you know, viewership you're going to be able to get to pay for that, say on a monthly basis or per download, that might be another good model that you know, might be a little more predictable than some who the heck knows how much we're going to get paid on a given day, you know, Google AdSense setup.
I mean, and that's it's sort of a crapshoot when you upload to YouTube. I mean, you may or may not get those eyes. And the ebb and flow of the internet world and what rises to the top, it doesn't always make sense.
Well, yeah. And, you know, another good example of someone who just ran with the over-the-top thing, Louis C.K., the comedian. He decided that for, I think it was one of his latest, you know, just recorded video stand-up things, he said, I'm going to post this video on my internet website. I'm not even going to put digital rights management, you know, copy protection on the video. I am going to make people pay to download it. But once they've got the video, I mean, heck, they could put it on internet sharing websites and there's not going to be anything blocking that. But he did it as an experiment to kind of become his own broadcaster. He knew he had an audience. He knew people would probably download it to a degree. His costs weren't that high to create this thing. And he posts this video, and I seem to remember that within like a few days, he had made millions of dollars, and it was way more than he was expecting.
I don't know that it was millions of dollars.
No,
but
it was. It was millions.
I think over time. But I think, if I recall, he certainly made, of that amount of money total, he made more of a percentage than if he were to have used traditional channels.
Yeah, like if he were to have sold that content to HBO, Comedy Channel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are all examples of over-the-top because, again, at the end of the day, it's the content creator, either through some self-created platform or more of a readily accessible platform like a YouTube, like a Vimeo, like even iTunes, right? I mean, video podcasts that you're kind of finding through iTunes, or even technically audio podcasts, much like this one, are two examples of kind of over-the-top delivery because it's just the people making the content with some platform to hook the viewers up to the content, the internet connection that we all share, that's all there really is. And again, it's just crazy, right? Because there's only so many advertising dollars out there.
But Nick, I don't understand. How is this a viable solution? How can somebody make money if the crux of everything that we've done up until this point relies so heavily upon advertising dollars?
Well, that's the thing, right? It's a whole new way of getting content out there. And it's a whole new business structure for people creating content because, again, you don't necessarily need to have that relationship with the middleman who's distributing the content. And yet, those middlemen did fulfill a decent role, which was marketing the content and at least being able to say, we're going to put it in front of this many people through our established network, right? Like making a movie, right? I want to make a movie. Used to be, You showed it at Sundance, you did this, you did that, and you tried to pick up a distributor. And they couldn't necessarily tell you exactly how many theaters they were going to get to run the film for how many weeks, but at least you kind of could count on them putting some effort into that and trying to get you some returns. Whereas these days, go on to Netflix. I'd say most of the movies on there are people who probably planned to have them be primarily distributed through Netflix in the first place.
And
a lot of documentary content.
I've been at a lot of marketplaces at film festivals, and one of the things that is very prevalent is Netflix is actually carving themselves out as a content distributor for original content. You all may recall reading last year that the next season of Arrested Development is coming exclusively to Netflix.
Oh, thank goodness, too, because that's a show that just needs to last forever.
I hope it's not like visiting, an old girlfriend. Remember all the reasons you liked it? But anyway.
I've always completely shut down my relationships.
I see. There's no previous visits.
So they're getting into the distribution game.
Red Envelope is their company, and they do a lot of original content purchasing and distribution. And this is really viable.
So, but you bring up this good point, which is that this is all so different, and there's only so many advertising dollars out there, and none of this has really gelled quite yet. And there's been some successful experiments. There's been some not successful experiments. And then you've got folks like the traditional, quote unquote, distributor middlemen, be they the Comcasts, the Verizons, whatever, trying to hold up net neutrality legislation because they actually want to be able to slow down content you're getting from other sources that aren't going through them.
Imagine a world where if you wanted to watch the exact same video on YouTube, you could only download it at X amount of kilobytes per second versus the exact same video through Comcast network. That sets tiers of the internet, and it goes against everything that the forefathers of the internet, as far as I'm concerned, wanted the internet to be.
Yes,
free moving knowledge and data back and forth without any restriction.
It seems pretty dangerous. It seems I don't like the sound of it. I mean, you hear some counter arguments about the amount of money that these companies have to invest in the actual physical infrastructure and that they've got to recoup that. But listen, I think if I'm paying for an internet connection, you charge me. If you want to say it's this much bandwidth, this many megabits a second, this is how many gigs of content I can get a month. That's all. Come up with a dollar amount for those things that I can just pay, that you're happy charging me those amounts no matter who I'm getting my content from. That should be separate from the content.
But they're not happy. They're not happy because they're not making enough money.
No, they want more money.
They do.
They're already highly profitable. But
that's
the
thing.
They want more money.
They do. But,
it's capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
This is good for the new school people, but the business models aren't fully developed, and there's experimenting, as we said. And
there's things like the Revision 3 network, which I think would be an earlier experiment in sort of internet.
But
television.
Look at what happened to them. They got bought recently by Discovery.
Is that true?
Communications. Yep, Rev3 got bought by Discovery. I know this because Discovery is a client of ours, and they mentioned it to me recently, and I was like,
"Oh yeah, it looks like they purchased it."
Yeah, it says a Discovery Communications
roughly $30 million. So if you start your own content network, keep at it for a couple 6 years, and then eventually Discovery will buy you.
But look at it, Discovery. I mean, they aren't a Comcast. They are certainly a partner of Comcast, and that Comcast pays them for their content, but Discovery is realizing, hey, maybe we can have this alternate tier of content that we can kind of somehow monetize and get to the viewers directly just through their internet connection. And maybe it's not going to necessarily be the exact same stuff you would see on the Discovery Channel through your cable provider, but it's just another potential revenue stream. And even these big established, more broadcast, traditional broadcast-oriented companies are seeing that they have to kind of get in this space. And the fact is, this space is occupied by so many different entities. Again, the folks who are really rooted in traditional distribution, not so sure what to do. But maybe we can at least talk about the technologies a little more, you know, specifically. So, like, people know, you know, we talked about kind of the YouTube approach. We talked about kind of maybe just building a website.
Let me paint a picture for you, and we'll use this as our example.
Sure.
So we got a local chat show guy. Maybe he had, you know, like a public access television show, but he really wants to take it to the next level. So he has an existing viewer base, but, you know, he knows that he's got a 2-camera setup and he's got a studio space. And he wants to take it to the next level.
Let's just say he interviews people about their alien abductions.
He interviews people about their alien... What?
Well, I'm thinking like those weird things you see on public access TV in the middle of the night.
Oh, that's true, though. To be honest with you, I don't see public access television anymore.
Well, there's very little of it compared to what there used to be.
But let's say there's a guy...
He once had a late night public access television channel.
And he's got the goods, but he doesn't know. And maybe he's an old school guy who has been at this for a while, but really doesn't know how to take it to the next level. He doesn't get the airtime. He doesn't, you know, he can't get out of the region. What does he do?
So, well, we talked about the poor man's approach of just spitting out his video, turning it into an H.264, uploading it to YouTube, maybe using their advertising system so he can get paid on that. But what's like beyond that, right? Well, we mentioned partnering with a CDN, like an Akamai. And again,
what's CDN stand for, Nick?
It's a content delivery network. And these guys have servers all over the internet, literally. I mean, you know, co-located all over the place to buffer content across a wide geographic and kind of networking geographic range so that when you want to watch a video, you don't necessarily have to watch the exact same copy that's in Milwaukee. I can watch a copy of it that's on a server here in Baltimore and get much quicker speed without as much internet traffic in between blocking the quality. So an Akamai, you can pay a certain amount to host videos. And again, you just point to them through your website. But so what's this content producer do? Well, he needs to have a website probably because probably one of the primary means that his viewers are going to get to this content is by opening their web browser and pointing it to his website, and he's got videos on it.
It's a novel idea.
Yeah, maybe he's got a paywall there, so you have to sign in, and you're paying your $5 a month or $10 a month, or maybe it's a per download, you're paying a certain fee. But whatever or maybe it's just ads. Maybe he's just got ads baked into the website. He's getting some advertisers of, you know,
maybe alien abduction spray. It's even integrated, you know, into his video content. You know,
maybe he's doing little, like, you know, if you want to keep the gray aliens from doing horrible things to you in the middle of the night, use Sparky's alien repellent.
It's funny you say that because this is really at its core going back to the very beginning of television with the Colgate hour. I mean, like, there was a time when it was appropriate.
Yeah, sponsored,
you know,
by
this hour brought to you by my missing left tooth. I can't even say that as if you were missing your left tooth.
I don't even think you intended to do that.
No.
It's like, but you just really got into the character.
I did. But so, you know, that's interesting that that is a model.
And I think that's a good moment for me to mention that the Workflow Show is sponsored by Chesapeake Systems, your suave purveyors of internet media technology and such. Visit us on the web at www.chessa.com. If you have any questions or comments about the Workflow Show, send it
to... Who is this, like, creepy, sexy guy that's, like, reading us, like...
Aren't those mutually exclusive terms?
Creepy, sexy?
Yeah, well, maybe not.
I don't know. Not here at Chesapeake System.
But anyway, yeah, that's an... I mean, you may do this. You may have your cool little web podcast, and you just have sponsors that are paying because they want to get to your niche audience, right? Because a lot of this content's going to be pretty niche-y. You're going for, like, the 75 people on the planet who are really into green socks. I don't know.
I was going to say... X-Files fan fiction, but Green Socks works too.
Whatever it may be, whatever you want to make your video podcast about. So you've got your website. Maybe you want to take it a little further. Maybe you want everyone with an iPhone or an iPad or Android to have an app to get to your video content. Well, what are you going to have to do then? Well, you're going to either have to yourself or through some kind of contractor or a permanent employee that you bring on, build mobile apps, right? And maybe in conjunction with that, maybe you want to have a a Roku box channel that you want anyone with a Roku set-top box and an internet connection to have a channel for, you know, whatever your weird show is. Or excellent show, as any of our clients would
create. Weird and excellent, because those are not mutually exclusive.
In fact, I would argue that most excellent things have a certain element of weirdness.
That's creepy and slightly sexy.
So, you know, you need developers. You need web developers.
Developers. I'm sorry.
Whoa, you just channeled Steve Ballmer. But you weren't pounding on your chest.
No, and I'm not nearly as bald or sweating.
So you need to develop, right? What don't you need? Well, you don't necessarily need a television broadcast engineering staff that knows all about how to feed video signals into cable headend systems.
That's right. You just need a really smart guy who can maybe program an app.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's all about IT. And granted, even the world of traditional broadcast technologies, most of that gear is IT equipment at this point. However,
network addressable IT equipment.
That's the thing. This is all just about networking and TCP/IP and developing web pages or mobile apps or set-top box apps that often are not much more than kind of web pages wrapped up in a little extra. And you're really controlling the entire experience for your viewer. But it's about app development. It's about writing some code. It's about compressing the video. We mentioned Telestream and some other tools that can be used to generate, you know, good quality H.264 video. Now, there's another element to this, too. Most of what we've been talking about has to do with kind of on-demand, right? Everyone wants on-demand. And when you go to the internet, everything is on demand. I go to YouTube, and any video that's on YouTube, I could just kind of click right then and there and see, boom.
And if it doesn't load, I'm irritated.
But I do think there's another model, which probably will start to evolve, which is something that mimics traditional scheduled broadcast television, but purely within the context of over-the-top technology. So, and I'll give you an example, right? So you go to CNN. CNN has an iOS app, and you can watch, quote-unquote, live video on the CNN app. Or you can even go to CNN's website, and they've got a video section. Now, that's not really over the top because, again, I think they still, at least especially for your full-on web browser version, they make you enter credentials that prove that you are a paying cable television customer, so then they let you have the live feed because they don't want it to interfere
that's
with you
true.
Continuing to pay.
The only thing as an unpaid CNN user you can do is basically access the pre-uploaded and already vetted video clips.
But let's say you weren't CNN, the cable news network. Let's say you were INN, the internet news network, and you wanted to start this whole thing from scratch, right? Well, you know, you could have your own app that still was like a live broadcast.
Sure. You could build out a schedule with something like Tools on Air.
So let's talk about that. Let's say you wanted to have something that basically just looked like watching CNN, but you were watching Internet News Network through an app on your iPhone. What would you need? So with on demand, it's really easy because you're basically uploading a set of videos that people are essentially streaming or downloading as they click on them and watch them right then and there. Live is a little different. Like, let's say you just had a schedule that you were running through and you have half hour segments and hour segments and you got a talk show at 4 and, you know, it's not the Oprah Winfrey show, it's the
Mopra Pimfrey show.
Yeah. In the weird internet bizarro world.
Yeah, Mopra Pimfrey. Have you checked out her book club?
She's actually, I find her fresh and appealing to a youthful audience.
Yeah, when Mom Trues came on there, that was an awesome episode too.
Oh, when he was jumping up and down on that waterbed?
Yes, that's right.
And then it popped.
That was funny. And then he electrocuted her.
So in this alternate world, you need to have a system that is spitting out kind of live television, a combination of both live content and stuff that you've already produced, but is being played out on a schedule. So it's
still live in the sense of when you turn on your television, if you miss the first 15 minutes of Seinfeld, you miss the first 15 minutes of Seinfeld because it's 15 minutes past the hour.
Yes, but you're doing it through this over-the-top delivery system and not through your cable or satellite provider's set-top box. So what do you need? Well, you mentioned Tools on Air. Tools on Air is a software development company that we're friendly with. I mean, we're a reseller and integrator for them. And they basically make software for the Mac platform specifically that can turn your Mac into a television playout server with kind of what's usually referred to as an automation system.
But isn't that like their slogan is like, turn your Mac into a TV station?
It's actually TV station on a Mac, I think.
Oh, no, it's TV station in a Mac.
In a Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, now it's all the same thing.
Now they show it all off running on Mac Minis, right? So what could this playout server be? Well, it's a Mac Mini plugged into like a Thunderbolt AJA or Blackmagic Video I/O device, like with AJA. It's the I/O XT. It plugs into the Mac Mini with a Thunderbolt cable. You know, you've got the Mac Mini with its built-in hard drive or SSD, and maybe you like, you know, just tether another hard drive onto it, and that's where you've loaded up a bunch of video content. Well, you install Tools on Air's software package called Just Play on the system. And maybe you even install a copy on another system. And Just Play you use to build schedules, basically.
And Just Play.
And Play. And in fact, that uses a slightly separate piece of software that's bundled with it called Just Out. And what's Just Out? It just plays out video out of, say, that AJA or Blackmagic card.
But so you're making playlists like this is your iTunes.
Making playlists. You've got a schedule. You can schedule out months of stuff in advance if you want to. You got a little calendar and a schedule, and you're dragging stuff in, and you even have graphics capabilities. You can put bugs in there and crawls and graphics and, you know, all sorts of neat little stuff. And it would look like it is a television playout server like the ones that major broadcasters use, except it's like 1/100th the cost to set one of these up. And it could be running off of a Mac Mini in your basement or wherever. And now you've got like HD SDI video spitting out of this, running on a schedule. You can schedule live events, so you can kind of like cross over to something that's happening live in the studio, and then at the 30-minute break, you know, where you're ready to switch back over to pre-scheduled, you know, pre-produced content, boom, it goes back to just playing movies that are on that hard drive that's connected to the system.
Nothing would stop you from integrating into your playlist here, by the way, advertising.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You just make arrangements with whoever wants to pay you to have little advertising slots, right? And so now I'm spitting, boom, HD SDI digital video out of an AJA card. But that's not what we send across the internet to viewers. That's a broadcast standard of video. So now I need an encoder. I need a live video.
You need a real
streaming encoder.
One that's real time, that's going to do it right on the fly as it comes out in the full uncompressed from back of the Mac Mini.
That's right. So, you know, another one of our vendor partners that we like and make great products that fit into this space is called Haivision. Haivision makes a device called the Coolabyte.
H-A-I Vision?
Yeah, and again, we're going to put all these folks in the show notes on our website, chessa.com, and when you go there and find this episode listed, we'll make sure David Ryan, our marketing director, makes links to Tools on Air and Haivision. But Haivision has a encoder box for live streaming called the Coolabyte. The HD SDI digital video that you have spitting out of your little Tools on Air system and its AJA or Blackmagic interface goes into the Coolabyte's HD SDI input. And what's the Coolabyte got on it? It's got an Ethernet port. And you put it on your internet connection. And you generate a stream, and or more likely several streams, different bit rates, different streaming formats. They're all probably going to be H.264 video as the actual video codec, but there's HTTP live streaming, otherwise known as HLS, which is the streaming format, how that video actually gets packetized and spit out. That's appropriate for iOS. There's other formats. There's several primary streaming formats now that all use H.264 video. And this Coolabyte box is going to generate multiple streams, probably at multiple bit rates in multiple flavor of stream. You're going to have an arrangement with a party like Akamai or Limelight Networks or one of these other content delivery networks. You basically shoot them those live streams, and there's going to be a little bit of latency from when you are encoding. Maybe it's 15 seconds, maybe it's 25 seconds. and you send that stream or those streams to your Akamai partner that you're paying monthly for a certain amount of content. They then are divvying those streams and spreading them all over the interweb. So your viewers anywhere can go to your website or your app, click the button for the live channel that you're sending out, and boom, they're watching this broadcast that, again, is being generated on the Tools On Air playout system, is getting encoded by your live encoder made by Hivision, say, the Koolabyte, or something similar. That's getting bounced off of the content delivery network, and they're disseminating those streams on the internet. And then you then are kind of pointing to those streams through your website that you're monetizing or selling advertising space on, that you are you know pointing to using your mobile app that you're selling through the app store on iTunes, and people are watching on their iPhones while they're waiting for the bus. This is the heart of 21st century broadcasting. And this is what it looks like.
You know, as you're saying all this, I'm thinking, wow.
I want to get out of selling this stuff for a living and actually kind of like start my own television channel. I know. I think about this every day.
The thought I had, though, was of all those countries out there that may have internet infrastructure but may have oppressive regimes as far as the government is concerned, there are certainly other ways. I look at...
It's disruptive, to say the least.
It is. It certainly it circumvents a lot of existing and prevailing censorship as it relates to terrestrial broadcast.
Well, that's right. I mean, you look at a lot of countries, not a ton, but enough of them, where the main broadcasters are very directly state-sponsored entities. Granted, of course, there's many ways to filter content on the internet if you're an oppressive regime, but, you know, this at least puts the theoretical ability to generate this content out there in the hands of almost anyone. It's pretty radical. And again, I think really threatening to established broadcasters because, again, there's only so many advertising dollars out there. And it used to be there were three main television networks, and then there were four, and then there was like a dozen, and then there was like 200 or 300 on your cable channel. And now there's like technically hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people generating and distributing video on the internet. And they're all competing for a certain amount of advertising revenue. And this is like shocking the heck out of traditional broadcast. And it's like, wait, why are we having to fight so hard for advertising dollars now?
Yeah, and you know, the truth of the matter is that there are still probably the same number, if not more, actual people consuming content. It's just
there's a lot
the
more
distribution
content.
Of, you know, what those numbers are has significantly changed. But also on top of that, the method in which they use to report it to you know, capture the metrics. I mean, they're not accurate.
Well, and again, it's all kind of gelling right now. It's all coming together, and it is the Wild West. It's like this really is. If the internet itself was the Wild West of just getting kind of print and maybe even eventually photographic content into the hands of everyone, what we're now seeing is the Wild West of anyone can get high def video in the hands of anyone. And it is just dramatically shaking up, you know, the business models, the established paradigm of broadcast and who controls it. And there's a lot of fighting going on. And it's important for people to kind of keep their eye on literally what's even happening at the level of politics, because, you know, there's five main companies that own most traditional media outlets. And now there's all of these new teeny little bit players coming into the field, and it's kind of crazy. But, you know, we've talked about, from the viewer perspective, all the platforms that are out there, we've talked about how from the content creator perspective, it's really pretty easy. And again, we obviously at Chesapeake Systems do deal with setting these types of content creation and distribution systems up. Distribution is like the newest side of our business, right? Like, we used to basically just do post-production systems, SANs, workstations, asset management systems, you name it. And now, when we started to realize a year or two ago that, you know, it's almost like, you know, there was first desktop publishing and then, you know, desktop audio recording and then desktop video editing. Well, now we're like at this point of like desktop broadcasting, which is insane. And yet that's where we're at. And we said, you know, we need some partners in this area, and we need to kind of be able to enable our clients, if they want to become these 21st century over the top internet broadcasters. So,
and think about,
you know,
it. Think about
that's
it like
a
this.
Huge emphasis for us.
I agree.
Right now.
I agree. And just to, again, as you're saying this, I'm thinking, well, okay, it's not just for Joe Schmo who wants to do a chat show. Think about all the houses of worship. Certainly, I know we've dealt with a number of houses of worship that actually had Sunday morning television shows.
Absolutely.
Who, for whatever reason, no longer have those shows, but are still generating the exact same content on a weekly basis.
I mean, I think so. Who can be a broadcaster right now? Who should be a broadcaster?
Individuals,
right now?
Churches,
corporations. Why not? I'm. You know,
what if a sports arena
were to just. Oh, well, that's...
Take their video feeds direct.
Again, it's all possible. It's, do their existing business models allow for,
well,
a clear-cut
path?
Well, then
such-and-such,
right?
Name stadium might lose that such-and-such name.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if the Verizon Center is necessarily yeah, going to want you to bypass Verizon. But you're absolutely right. I mean, corporate entities, why not? Why not have a Frank's Sugar Water, you know, channel on the internet, you know, if you sell soda, you know, to people?
Well, you know,
have your own video identity.
The president has his weekly address. Why shouldn't a CEO of a company, small or mid-sized otherwise, have the exact same?
I'm also thinking think tanks. I'm thinking, you know, non-government organizations. Mm-hmm. If I'm a not-for-profit and I want to, like, get lots of really cool video content
NASA.
Out there. Well, yeah, and there's NASA TV, and you can go to the NASA website.
I want, like, a whole, like, over-the-top NASA programming. I watch it all the time. They take that guy who had the mohawk from the,
oh,
you know.
Oh, he's, man.
Make him.
That guy's going to have
he's
dates
milking it.
For the rest of
good
his
life.
Good
on you, buddy.
I'm mohawk guy from when we landed, like, a robot on another planet. Baby.
It sounds like a blaxploitation film when you put it that way. Mohawk guy who landed a robot on another planet.
I guess. One of the weird ones, though.
Yeah, like, weird and excellent.
Like, really underground.
And sexy and creepy as well. But
here's how I envision it, right? Because, I mean, to wax philosophical for a moment, you know, there was a point at which, you know, thousands of years ago, writing itself was this crazy technology that only, like, the priest class of society had access to. Literally, no one else knew even how to write. It was just for the priests and the kind of political and moneyed establishment of, you know, ancient Egypt or whatever. And eventually writing became more common, and other merchant classes of society began to use it, and then average people began to use it. And then the printing press came out, and that really just dramatically.
Anybody can say whatever they want, and that's,
people are nailing creeds on church doors and stuff, and I guess that was important, but I don't really remember much more because I didn't pay a lot of attention to those classes. Something like that. And, you know, that technology of being able to put the mass-produced printed word in pretty much anyone's hands was radical. The internet was obviously radical and able to allowing pretty much anyone with access to it, the ability to get ideas out there. And we all know video conveys information in a way that is just so visceral and so dramatic and so direct and so just empowering. You know, you mention that someone, you know, gets beat up by someone, big whoop, but the moment there's like a cell phone video of it, it's like the biggest thing on TV, right? And so, you know, now that it's so easy for anyone to get video content to anyone through this whole over-the-top, you know, thing, that I don't know. I think we're just in the real baby stages of where this should go. And, you know, I know that as an organization, we are hungering to help enable more organizations to,
sure,
to stand up these types of operations.
Any kind of video.
The reality is, now it's out there for anyone, and any story you have to tell, any opinion you have, any product you're trying to sell, any change in, you know, political, you know, law or anything, I mean, you name it, there's no reason you probably shouldn't be trying to communicate a lot of your ideas in the form of video, because it's so easy to go over the top.
Over the top. All right, so that's the end of the workflow show.
Oh, well, and I'll mention that on September 20th, I think the exact time has not been determined. It's usually around 7 p.m. I, Nick Gold, will be speaking at the D.C. chapter of SMPTE, the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers, I think at NEB headquarters in D.C., the National Association of Broadcasters headquarters in Washington, on this very subject for the DC chapter meeting of SMPTE on September 20th. It's going to be an open invite. If you go to chessa.com over the coming days, we will have specific information on how you can attend. But you know, I feel strongly that traditional broadcast engineers embrace these concepts. I think that people who are doing over-the-top broadcast be kind of ushered into the world of broadcast engineering. I think there's many lessons they have to learn from traditional broadcast engineering, but traditional broadcast engineering needs to expand its definition of what television and broadcast even is in the 21st century.
And that's what Nick's going to talk about.
It should be interesting. September 20th in the evening, check our webpage, chessa.com, for more info. We'd love to have tons of people there. Another final mention: if you're listening to the Workflow Show,
please, please do give us a good rating on iTunes. We'd appreciate it very much.
I mean, I think it's a little inappropriate to ask for a good rating. I think you just ask people to rate the show, and you hope that out of the goodness of their hearts.
It just came out of my mouth. If you like us, rate us. If you don't like us, you can also rate us. But then again, you did listen to us for an hour, which I appreciate.
Yeah, if you're getting to this part of the broadcast, you really probably ought to be giving us 5 stars.
Yes.
Purely to help you kill your time.
Yes.
So thanks so much for listening. Until next week, this is Nick Gold.
And I'm Merrill Davis, signing off.